Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Sukkah Daf Yud Dalid. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur 5 lines from the bottom of Daf Yud Gimel Amid Beis. We left off our previous shiur literally in the middle of a discussion. So in order to have any understanding of what we are going to be continuing with today, at the beginning of today's shiur, namely until the Mishnah Adaf Yud Dalid, where, of course, we start a new topic, any introductory material would best be gained by having been familiar with our previous shiur. So as to let's say, not bore those that are familiar with our previous year. So we will simply continue where we left off, and of course, encouraging anyone who is a first-time listener to listen to our previous year. We are dealing with the immediate problem of Yodos. We saw a Machlokes Tanoim, the Yodos of the plants that need to be mevutal in order to serve as schach, and it seems that that issue is a machlokes tanoim. The Gemara left off. We left off our last discussion as saying that the source that we introduced at the end of our previous year was dealing with a case of food matter. We can talk specifically about the grains that were alluded to, the kushin ubahen shibolin that we saw now in that source, that were harvested with the purpose of eating, and then there was a change of mind to use it for schach. And that answer, of course, was an attempt to explain how Rav Menashia, who we saw in the middle of this omid of Yud Gimel Amid Beis, was actually saying something that was Aliva de Kule Alma. And as far as the source is concerned, it was talking about a different case. It was talking about a case where the grains were harvested initially for eating purposes, and there was a change of mind. So if that's the case, the Gemara now asks a question. This is a long question. It takes us to the upper part of Yud Dalet Amud Aleph. You can see it goes to the first wide line, and in the course of this question you'll notice some additional markings. There's a double underline marking, and on the side of the Gemara the double underline is featured under the Mivneh, the structural note, where you see V'chi Tema, that's the term that you see double underline. These are Hatsa'os, suggestions, but they'll be rejected. Suggestions, K'dei Lahazbir Lama Lefi HaTanakama, why according to the first opinion in the Tanaic source that we saw, Ein Tzorech Levatel Es Hayodois Afa Pi Shenikzeru B'Haschola L'Shem Oichel. Even though it was harvested for eating purposes, and food that grows, vegetation that grows, and the accompanying stems are generally to understood as being yodos, and hence mekabel tumo. And if that's the case, so they wouldn't be suitable for schach, why does the Tana Kama not indicate that you have to have enough balance of the stalk, which isn't the yad, enough to be mevatel not only the grains but also the immediate part of the stalk that's closest to the grains themselves, as we explained in our previous year, that constituted the yad. So the Gemara asks, we turn to the Gemara, five lines from the bottom. E koitzitzon lachilo. If that is how Rav Menashia is explaining the source, so as to preserve his own opinion, as according to all Tanoim, so my tamayu derabonan. Why then in the source, where he, let us, assuming this answer that he, it's talking about a case where he harvested initially for eating purposes, why does the Tanakama not indicate, like the Acherim, that there is a need to mevatel the Yodos? V'chi teimo kosavri rabbonon. You might say, well, the rabbonon hold kevon de nimlach alehen lesikuch, since he did change his mind for using the stalks of grain for schach purposes, bot lo le machshavoso, the change of mind is enough to cancel his original thought, i.e. for eating. And in the course of changing your mind, so then the yad no longer has the yad status. Umi bot lo le machshava b'hochi. Does change of mind actually serve to cancel something, to neutralize something? Change of mind doesn't have that strength. V'hotanan, we have learned in the following Tanaic source. Kol ha-kelim, we continue at the top of Yud-Dalet Amud Aleph, Yordin Lidei Tumo B'machshava, all vessels can take on a vessel status. And when we speak about a vessel having vessel status, what we mean to say is that item now categorized as an actual vessel, it would be subject to defilement if some source of defilement comes into contact with it. So once a decision is made to use a particular item as a vessel, so it enters the realm of tumah, means susceptibility to tumah. So the Mishnah teaches us in this Tanaic source that kol hakelim yordin lidei tumah b'machshava v'ein oilin mitumasan ela b'shinui maisa. The rule says that a decision to use something that may appear to others as an incomplete vessel, but you want to use it as it is, that subjects it to tumah susceptibility. However, if you have an item that you decide, an item that was already determined to be a vessel, a kli, and you decided that you don't want to use it as a kli, that you want to, let's say, process it further, that doesn't work. The change of mind doesn't work. In other words, a mental decision to declassify something as a vessel, that is ineffective. And how does something become, let's, declassified or removed from vessel status, as the source says, "Ein oilin mitumasan ela b'shinui maisa." It doesn't arise or leave the tuma realm unless an action is done to it, some type of alteration is done to it. We often speak about a poking a hole of sufficient size in a vessel that would remove it from its tuma susceptibility. Shehamaisa mevatel miad maisu miad machshava, an action is capable of undoing a previous action. In other words, if something took on vessel status because an action was done, an act of construction or formation was done, so a subsequent action done to that particular item can also undo the tumah status. And likewise, and goes without saying, that an action can undo something that took on tumah susceptibility because of a mere mental decision. Umachshava, and now here we dashed underlines, because this is the phrase that's of direct relevance to our discussion. Umachshava eino mevateles, lo miyad maise velo miyad machshava, a mental decision. A change of mind is not capable of canceling or neutralizing a previous action, and not even a previous decision. So to translate things into more practical terms, if you have grains that you harvested with their stalk and grain all attached, and you harvest it initially for eating purposes, the part of the stalk that's closest, that's, let's say, a hand breadth of stalk closest to the actual grains is the yad. So at the point that you harvested it for food purposes, that imposed upon that section of the stalk yad status, and as such it's something that's makabel tumo, and as such it's not fit for using a schach. And if you plan to use this entire stalk and with the grain for schach purposes, then you'd have better be able to have enough non-food, non-yad stalk there to outnumber, to neutralize, to be the rove, the majority, in order for the schach to be kosher. And yet, the Tanakamo didn't say that you have to mevatel the yad part of the stalk. Apparently, the Tanakama is not bothered by the yad being there. Well, how could that be? And if you'll say, just by having changed your mind from the original food purpose to now schach purpose, that's not going to undo the yad status. V'chitem, or another suggestion as to why the Tanakama, the first opinion, doesn't seem to be bothered by the yad issue. V'chitem ohani mili kelim. You might, if you want to say that, we say that machshava is not mevatel, that a change of mind doesn't neutralize something. Well, you might say that concept is limited to vessels, hani mili kelim de chashivi, that have significance, so that a mere mental change of mind isn't sufficient for changing its status. But yoda, stems of fruits, whose whole purpose is to enable you to move the fruit around, to hold, to move the fruit without actually touching the fruit, that's the yad, and its whole purpose is for eating matters. This is what you might have tried to argue, that it became a yad because of your decision to use it as food, and it can become a non-yad because of your change of mind, that you don't want to use it as food anymore. As in our case, you want to use it for schach. So that, let's just repeat this suggestion, that maybe the principle that machshava doesn't undo status is limited to vessels, but when it comes to, because of their significance, but when it comes to food items, just like it became a yad through a thought, it can lose the yad status because of the change of mind. That's also not true. V'hotanam kol yodos ha'oichlin she bosason begora in tahoros. All yodos, all stems of food that you were bosason in the granary, tahoros. Now we're deliberately not translating the word bosason yet. If you translate the word bosason as simply undoing a binding, a rope that holds them together, that holds, let's say, stalks of vegetables together, and if you say that that bosason means untying the knot, that's in fact the equivalent of a machshav. It's not a significant action. And the source is telling me that yodos ha'ochlin shebosason begoren toros. If you untie the binding of the grains in the granary, then they lose their yad status. Shapir, then we can buy this suggestion that the mere change of mind removes the yad status from the stalks of grain that were harvested initially for eating purposes, and now that you change your mind for using them for schach, the change of mind really is enough to remove the yad status. Therefore, there's no need to neutralize them, to mevatel them. Ella, l'man domar my bosason mamish, but if you explain bosason means literally bosason, now literally bosason means crushed. My ikol lememar. In order for the yad to lose its status, the source tells me that if it's crushed, if someone, let's say, tramples on the stalk of that's attached to the grain and frays it, and thereby making it totally soft and flexible, and no longer having a stem, a stalk status to it. So then, my ikol amemar, why did the Rabbanon, in the case of his harvesting of grains for eating purposes, and then he simply changed his mind to use it as chach, why then is there no need to mevatel the yodos also? The mere change of mind isn't enough to remove a yad status. So the Gemara answers, very simple answer, hochonami, in the brisa on Yud Gimel Amud Beis that spoke about the Sochei Te'enim, etc., and the where we saw the Machlokas Tanakam Nechirim, is Shebosas Amamish. In fact, you know what happened over there? The fellow, after he harvested them for eating purposes, he then crushed the stalks. If that's the case, if he crushed the stalks, so then why do the Achirim still grant Yad status to the stalks? They said that it's not going to be kosher for Schach unless you're Mavatil the Yadas also. But you crushed them. They shouldn't have any useful status to them anymore. The Gemara answers, the Amur Kereb Yosi, the Achirim view this as Rav Yosi does. Disnan Rav Yosi Metame. Now Rav Yosi was the continuation of the source we saw just 5-6 lines up. The source said, "Kol Yodos Orechem Shabosu Begurin Toros." Rav Yosi Metame. Rav Yosi was telling you that even after they're crushed, there is still a Yad status. With that, we want to explain the Acherim back on Yud Gimel Amud Beis, as that's why they want, in the case of the grains that you want to use for schach purposes, you'll have to mevat, you have to make sure there's enough non-grain and non-yad material to mevatel the yodos as well. The Gemara asks, can you really apply Reb Yosi that we see here to explain the Acherim back on Yud Gimel Amud Beis? Hi, my. How can you compare Bishlamo Hosam there in the Machlokas we saw 6 lines above, the Tanakama and Reb Yosi regarding the stalks of grain at the granary? So, Bishlamo Hosam, time of the Reb Yosi, Chazio L'chribshim Ben Lokish. Even though the stalks of grain have been crushed, their attachment to the grain still has use. Reb Yosi will tell you there in the granary, the stalks, even the part closest to the grain, still has value, still has use as a yad. The Om Reb Shimon Ben Lokish Hoyel Uriyo Lahalfchon Ba'asar. An asar is a pitchfork. By virtue of the fact that the grains are still attached to the stalks, even if the stalks were crushed, you can still slip a pitchfork underneath it and flip them over. And that's useful in the granary and drying out the grains and whatever is needed in the process of processing grains. Elohocha, where we're talking about using the hocha means in the brisa on Yud Gimel Mebeis, where we're talking about using the harvested stalks of grains with the grains as schach lamai chazia. Of what value is there in the crushed stalk? And in simple terms, of what value is there? And hence, why do the acher need you to mavatel the yodos? The Gemara says there is value in the crushed stalk in the context of the use of the stalks of grain for schach, i.e. the owner wants the crushed stalk to be there. Chazia, it has value, l'chi sosar, when sukkah is over and you undo the sukkah, sosar is you take it apart, and you, then the, your, all of the schach is lying on the ground, and in your case, your schach is actually stalks of grain, albeit crushed, but they're attached to the grain. Laminkat luhu begilaihu. The Rashi explains on the third line under the Gemara, begilaihu, bekashin shelahem, yochsum vinotlu roshi hashibole mimohem. After Sukkot, when you undo your sukkah, it's easier to grab the grains by their stalks. They're still attached. They're frayed, but they're attached, and you'll be able to move around the grains that are attached to the stalks more easily this way. My understanding is that after Sukkot, and you have something to use as schach, and it's still attached to the grains, you'll want the grains. So it's easier to maneuver everything by virtue of the fact that you still have the stalks attached to the grains. So we've explained the Shita Sachirim as well, even though the stalks, and maybe we just summarize the whole approach here in the last our shir today, which we said continued from the end of our previous shir, was all in the interest of showing how Rav Menashe Bar Gado is l'chol hadeos as far as the Tanoim are concerned, someone who is kotzer l'schach, initially kotzer l'schach, so there is no yodos, because he's not interested in the attachment to the grain. He's interested because the grain itself is posel for schach. It's food. It's davar mekabel tuma, and therefore it's not fit to be used as schach. He's interested only in the stalks. That was Rav Menashe Bar Gado. Ah, we saw a source in which there was a machlokas tanoim about grain, stalks of grain with grains attached to them, where the achirim said there is yodos. So Rav Menashe Bar Gado says that's talking about a different case. That's where he harvested initially for food purposes and then changed his mind and intended to use it for schach. And we pointed out that the mere change of mind was not strong enough to mevatel the yodos status. And therefore, what really happened there, we explained, was he crushed the bosason, he crushed the stalks. And then the question arose, if he crushed the stalk, so we understand the Shtana Kama that says there's no yad status because it's been crushed. But according to the Achim, why is there a yad status? Why does he say after mevatel it? So we answered, and our final answer is that the owner is interested in the attachment to the grains, because after Sukkot he can maneuver the grains more easily that way. We didn't emphasize this enough, but those who are familiar with the issue of susceptibility for tumah, a lot of that is based on the fact that you are interested in it being there, in the status or the item or whatever, and we were focusing on that in our discussion about your interest in the attachment of the grains to the stalk. Having mentioned a pitchfork and flipping things over, the Gemara continues. Omar Rebelozer, Lama Nimshalot Filoson. Actually, we skipped a little bit. Let's go. We're back at Gufa, at the fourth wide line. Gufa kol yodei sa'ichlin shebasasan begoren tahoros. All stems that you were bosasan in the granary, they lose their yad status. Rabbi Yossi Metamen. Rabbi Yossi says they still do have a yad status. My bosasan, and here the Gemara goes over that which we mentioned before. What is meant by bosasan? Rabbi Yochanan Omar bosasan mamish. They actually crushed the stalks, not without detaching them from the grains, but you crushed them, causing them to fray. Rabbi Lozor Omer hitir ogdon. Bosasan is where you simply untied the bundles. According to Rebbe Lozer, he says that the the source is describing someone untying the bundles of grains, Hainu Demetam Rabbi Yossi. We understand Rabbi Yossi says that it still has a yad status because he didn't do anything of significance to change it, just untied a package. According to Rabbi Yochanan, who says that bosasan means actual crushing of the stalks, why is Rabbi Yossi mitame? Why does he declare the stem, the part of the grain of the stalk attached to the grain, as still having yad status? It would seem to have no value. Omer Reb Shimon ben Lakish, Hoyel Rios Lahofchon Ba'asar. Since they are still attached, even though the stalks have been crushed, it's nevertheless still suitable to be flipped over with a pitchfork. Omer Reb Elazar, Lomo Nimshalot Filosin Shel Tzadikim Ka'asar. The Pasuk says, Vayesar Yitzchok Lenoichach Ishto. Yitzchok and Rivka were barren. Of course, Yitzchak and Rivka of Chumash fame, or patriarch and matriarch, respectively, they were barren, and they prayed for having children. And the term that's used in the Torah for their prayer was Vaye Oser, and Isaac prayed opposite his wife. Why is that the word that is used, when we know that that the root of that word arsar also means a fork, in the fork in the pitchfork sense? So the Gemara answers lomar loch. It tells us it describes prayer. Ma osur ze mahapich satvua begorim mimokom lemokim, just like the pitchfork flips over grains in the granary from one spot to another. If you want to move the position of grains in a granary, so you do so by slipping a pitchfork under the stalks and flipping them over from where they are to the other place. So af tfiloson shel tzadikim, so too the prayer of the righteous. Ma'apeches daita shel kodesh baruch hu mimidas achzorios lemidas rachmonis, has the power of changing the mind, so to speak, of the Almighty from an attribute of harshness to an attribute of compassion. Now, what we did is, of course, we translated the Gemara. These are concepts that are very lofty. What do you mean, changing the mind of the Almighty? Who are we to do that? We're mere mortals, and the Almighty's mind, his decision-making, is something that we can't even perceive. All that is fine and good when describing the Almighty and true lofty, in a true and lofty perspective, but the Almighty Himself beseeches us to have a connection with Him through prayer. So in accordance with that, we know that prayer has this power. Again, how it works in that lofty realm up there in the cosmos and all, that's way beyond my understanding. But as far as from the human perspective, from the request of the Almighty, and how He wants us to behave, He wants our prayers. And in that context, we are saying that prayers function like a pitchfork. Just like a pitchfork flips things around, so too prayers can turn around the plan or the thinking of the Almighty from one of harshness to one of compassion. As you can see, we have a new Mishnah representing a new topic. So if even if maybe up till now the shiur was hard to understand because of lack of familiarity with a previous shiur, nevertheless, this is a new beginning. So on the side of the Gemara, we have a topic heading, the Nosei, which we indicate goes Ad Omid Beis. And when we say Ad Omid Beis, it goes to Omid Beis, where our intention really is that all of Omid Beis is dedicated to this topic. And very briefly, it's Mesachachin Benesorim, the ability or the right to use boards, When we say boards, we mean boards in the context of rafters, beams that one would otherwise use in construction. Can one use those for schach? Now, let's a word or two about beams. Midoraisa. From a strictly Torah perspective, there should be nothing wrong with using beams for wooden beams for your schach. Why? Well, they are gadol min ha'aretz. They grow from the ground. Of course, we've learned this already in previous dapim, that schach, in order to be kosher, needs to have two characteristics. It has to be something that grows from the ground and is something that is not mekabel tumah. It doesn't absorb tumah. It's not susceptible to tumah. Well, the beam has those two characteristics. It's wood, it grows from the ground, and it's not a vessel. It is a beam. At the very worst, it's pshute kliyetz. It's a flat, non-receptacle piece of wood, and as such, it's not mekabel tumah. So, from a strictly doraisa standpoint, nesorim beams, ceiling beams, should be okay if you go to a lumber yard or a construction company and buy beams nesorim. They should be okay for schach. So, nevertheless, we're going to see a machlokes tanoim. Are they acceptable? And we can tell you ahead of time, the issue is on a rabbinic level, and that is, if a person is seen covering his sukkah with standard construction beams, a person could come to reason, if this is kosher, so I can simply stay in my house. My ceiling is also covered with beams. Beams here, beams there. What difference does it make where you are? So you could stay in your house too, people would come to reason. And that is not acceptable. The Torah insists that you leave your house and dwell in a sukkah. So the fear is that if we allow using beams, you might come to remain in your house. We now turn to the Mishnah. Misachachim b'nesorim, divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says it's okay. You can make your schach using beams. Rabbi Meir oser. Rabbi Meir says you cannot do that. Nosan oleho neser shurochav arbot vochim sheirot. Ubelvad shelo ishan tachtov. Now this half of the Mishnah is something we're going to have to wait for the Gemara to explain. Rashi himself says, "Gemara meforsh man kotoni lo." The Gemara will explain who is saying, who is speaking over here. But if you just looking at the words themselves, it says, if you place a beam of four tfochim on your sukkah, it's kosher, provided you don't sleep underneath it. But we're not going to commit ourselves to any more than the translation at this point. Now, we have some markings. Notice we have a triangle. We are using a triangle, and you'll also notice the use of a double underline. The triangle highlights the names Rav and Shmuel, and they will be, let's say, moderating or presenting their own opinions as to what the Tanoim would hold, under what circumstances they argue, and under what circumstances they might agree. And that's the double underline highlights those expressions, machloikis, divrei hakol, or ki pligi, which is the same thing as saying, when is the machloikis. So we so far have been very vague. The Mishnah features a machlokas tanoim regarding beams. Well, what about the sizes of these beams? Does that make a difference? Does it make a difference if we can say there's a certain standard building size beam that looks like ceiling beams and other size beams that don't look like ceiling beams? So we turn to the Gemara, recognizing that We have Rav and Shmuel, and each one will present their version of the Machlokes Tanoim. Omar Rav, Machlokes b'nisorim shiyesh bohen arbo'o. The Machlokes exists when you are dealing with beams that have a width of 4 handbreadths, 4 tfochim. Rabbi Meir isle gzeras tikra. Rabbi Meir says, don't use 4 tefach beams because of the rabbinic gzera means a rabbinic restriction. In anticipation of tikra means in anticipation of sealing. If a person thinking, if this is kosher for a sukkah and this is the same kind of material that covers my house, why don't I just spend sukkahs in my house? So that's why Rabbi Meir says don't use them. People will come to this incorrect, this wrong conclusion. For Rabbi Yehuda, less legs, erastic. Rabbi Yehuda is not worried about people reasoning that way. Avol, b'nisorim shein bohen arbo. However, Rav tells us that beams less than 4 tvachim, divrei hakol ksheira. Everyone, even Rabbi Meir, would agree it's perfectly okay. Beams less than 4 tvachim wide, people don't use for, if majority of people don't use them for their ceilings. Ushmuel Omar, b'she'ein bohen arbo machlokes. Shmuel says beams, the machlokes tanoim refers to beams less than 4 tvachim. Avo yesh bohen arbo, beams of 4 tvachim, divrei hakol psula. Everyone, even Rabbi Yehuda, will agree that they are not to be used. The Gemara asks, regarding Shmuel, he just spoke about less than 4, there's a machlokes. So how, when he said less than 4, how much less than 4? Ein bohen arbo, afilu pochus mishlosha. Are you going to tell me that even less than 3 tvachim? Well, less than 3 is certainly less than 4. Are you saying that beams that are even less than 3 tvachim would be a machlokes tanim? And someone is going to say that, like Rabbi Meir would say, they're not kosher? How konim bi'almaninu? They're mere poles, or kunim are thin, they're like reeds. It's totally kosher schach. How can you say that less than 4, meaning even less than 3, would be a machlokes tanaim, and someone would say it's posel? Less than 3 is no different than kunim be'alma, simple standard kunim. Kunim are, as we say, reeds. Omar of Popo. Hachi Ka'omar. So Rav Popo explains what Shmuel was saying. Yesh ben arbo, 4 tefach wide beams, divrei hakol psula. Everyone agrees, unfit. Pochos mishlosh divrei hakol ksheira, my time akonim bi'amoninu. Less than 3 tefachim, everyone will agree is kosher. And why? Because they are mere reeds, meaning totally kosher schach. Ki pligi mishloisha ad arbo. We have a range. Beams that are 3 tfachim up till 4 tfachim is the area of machlikis. Morsavar kevon de lesnehu shiur mokom loi gazrinon. Rabbi Yehuda says, since they don't have the dimensions of a mokom. A mokom is defined as, we'll say, a domain. And a domain is understood to have an area of 4 by 4 tvachim. This shiur figures prominently in Maseches Shabbos, where defining what a domain is a major topic. So Rabbi Yehuda says, if something that doesn't have the dimension of 4 tvachim is not considered a mokom, it's not considered a domain, therefore it has no significance, and there's no reason not to use it as schach. More sovar, kevon de nachyu mitoras lovud. Once you are talking about 3 tfachim is no longer a shiur of lovud. Lovud, we've discussed this in the past. If you have, let's say, using the immediate case of sukkah. If you have poles or beams or reeds on your sukkah top, you're not allowed to have a gap of 3 tfachim running across your sukkah. So if you position reeds within 3 tfachim of one another, that's enough. They're considered attached. There's some more details, a little more to it than that. We're not introducing the issue of Chamsim Ruba Mitzilsa right now, assuming you'll have more shade than sun in this fashion. As long as items are within three tfachim of one another, they are considered attached. And it's not a problem of avir, it's not a problem of an air space. The concept of lovud we've seen already quite a bit in this Masechta till now. So Shmuel will tell you in explaining Rebbe Meir that if your beams are three tvachim, it's no longer considered lovud, therefore gazrinon, we impose the gezera, the rabbinic restriction of don't use them as your schach. Rashi says three lines from Bam Kiva Nafki Mitoras Lovud Shim Hoya Avir Bemokim Echod Mehem Lo Motzi Lemeimar Lovud. If there was, let's say, you have beams that measure three tfachim, and you were to remove one of those beams, so you wouldn't be able to say that the other remaining beams are connected with one another because there is a gap of three tfachim. Chashivi Lios Domos Letikra Vegazrinon. They thereby, beams of three tfachim gain significance, and we impose the gezeras tikra, even on them. The Gemara continues, and you'll notice we have a new marking, the house marking on the side. They are introduced as kushos al rav. Tanan, nosan ole neser shehu rochav arba'a tfachim. Our Mishnah mentioned the placing of a beam on the sukkah that's four tvachim. The Mishnah says it's kosher, but you can't sleep underneath it. You can't sleep under it. So as far as the Rav's approach to things, a four tefach beam, Rabbi Yehuda would have said is kosher. So why is this? And in the Mishnah, this quote from the Mishnah indicates that there's a problem with the four tefach beam. So Bishlamo lo Shmuel diomar b'she'ein b'en arbo machlokes. According to Shmuel, said that beams that don't have four tefachim, that is when there is a machlokes. Avol yesh b'en arbo divrei kol psula. But beams that have four tefachim, if with to them everyone agrees, are unfit. Mishum hachi lo yishan tachtov. Then this makes sense. This that the Mishnah says, don't sleep under it. It's unkosher schach. Ella, and so it's unkosher schach. You shouldn't be under it on Sukkis. Certainly don't sleep under it. Ella la Rav Yomar b'shiyesh bohen arbo machloikes. But according to Rav, that says beams that have four tefachim of width, there is a machlokis, and we want to emphasize for our purposes now, and Rabbi Yehuda is machshir that a beam of four tefachim is kosher according to Rabbi Yehuda. So according to Rav, that says yesh ben arbo machlokis aval ein ben arbo devar kol kshera, if it doesn't have four, everyone holds it's kosher. The Rabbi Yehuda may lo yishan tachtav. According to Rabbi Yehuda, a beam of four tefachim, why can't you sleep under it? The Gemara answers. There's no question on Rav from here. Nisavriz divrei kolhi. Who says that this section of the Mishnah is something that everyone authors, that it's authored by all Tanoim? Seifa son, the Rabbi Meir, the Seifa that says that a four tefach beam that's over your sukkah, you shouldn't sleep under it, that is according to Rabbi Meir. So Rav's version of Rabbi Meir states that Rabbi Meir does not want you to use four tefach beams, and therefore don't sleep under it. Toshma, the house indicates another question on Rav. So we quote from a Mishnah later on. Toshma, Shnei Sedinim Mitztarfim. on the top of your sukkah, you have sheets. You can see on page 40 of the Pirush Chai, the Book of Illustrations, the Pirush Chai that we've been using since the beginning of the Masechta, on page 40, illustration 199, a sheet is something that's not fit to be used as chach. It's something that's mekabel tuma. So the source says that two sheets are mitzarif. Mitzarif means they join up to form a unit of four tfachim, and we've mentioned in the past, but here we'll mention it again, that in the schach posel, something that's unfit to be used as schach, if you have four tfachim of that running across your sukkah, and let's assume you have a minimum size sukkah, and you have four tfachim of unfit, unkosher schach, it will split your sukkah into two parts, and hence you won't have a kosher sukkah anymore. So this source says that shnei sedinim mitzdarfin, as you can see in illustration 199, two strips of sheet material running across the top of the sukkah and down the middle of the sukkah are mitzdarif and join up to form a unit of four tfachim. Shnei nesorim ein mitzdarfin, two beams do not join up. Rashi at the top says Shnei Nesorim Ein Mitzdarfin, we're at the top of Omid Beis. Rashi says Shnei Nesorim Ein Mitzdarfin Lepoisla Dafilu Kula Mesuchechus Bem Ksheira of Rabbi Yudahi. The two beams aren't going to join together, as far as what Rashi says, that even if the entire sukkah were covered with beams, your sukkah is kosher. This is according to Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Meir Omer Af Nesorim Kisdinim. Nesorim can join up to create a problem just like Sedinim, just like the sheets. Notice that we have a Roman numeral to the side, number one, and a few lines later, Roman numeral number two, there are two Lishonos in this Gemara. Two versions presenting this particular question. So we should point out, by the way, that this, like before, this too is a long question. You can see that we have the long question marking going down the side of the Gemara. So seeing this source, the Gemara says Bishlamo l'Shmuel d'yomar b'she'en b'hen arbo machlikes avo yesh b'hen arbo divrei hakopsa. According to Shmuel, it says that when the beam lacks four, you have the machlokes tanoim, but if it has four, everyone agrees it's posel. So my mitzdarfin la'arbo, the source that speaks about, let's say Rabbi Meir says that the Nesorim are like Sedinim, that they join up, they can join up to become Schach Posel, and that would be the case if you have, let's say, you have a beam of less than four Tfachim, and another beam of less than four Tfachim next to each other, so they would join up to create the shiur of four tfachim and be considered schach posel. The Rashi on the second line from the top says Bishlamo l'Shmuel nukmo lahach plukto nami, he will set up this machlokes. We have Rabbi Meir and the Tanakam and Rabbi Huda b'she'ein bohen dalid, the beams featured in the source are beams that don't have four tfachim. V'ko'omar Rabbi Yudah shnei nesorim shel shlosh tfachim af agav the nofik mitor slovet ein mitzdarfin l'posla. Rabbi Yudah will tell you that two beams, each one of three tfachim, even though they're no longer considered lovud, their three tefachim is beyond the shiur of lavud, they don't join up to pasul it sha'af kulam misachim b'hem. You can cover your whole sukkah with beams of three tefachim. Rabbi Meir Omer nisara mitzdarfin l'arba'ah. Rabbi Meir, he doesn't want you using beams of three tefachim. So he will tell you that if you have two beams of three tefachim, they are mitzdarfin l'arba'ah. They join up to create an entity of, it's actually more than four tefachim physically speaking, but it's a halachic concept of sach posel pasels if you have four tefachim of it. So im be'emtza sukkah hein, if they are running down the middle of the sukkah, the posel to pasel the sukkah. So that if you have two beams of three tefachim, Rabbi Meir says don't use three tefachim beams. Now, three tefachim beams then fall under the category of schach puzzle. It's like, don't use metal rods. Let's say you put a metal rod across the middle of your sukkah. Well, one metal rod, if it doesn't have four tefachim to it, it doesn't puzzle the sukkah. However, if you have enough metal rods next to each other, adding up to four tefachim or more, certainly, that will ruin your sukkah. So too over here, Rabbi Meir is telling you, if you have two beams of three tefachim each next to each other, that they will join up to be a unit of more than four tefachim of schach posel. That will posel your sukkah. So all of this analysis fits in with Shmuel's presentation. Elo. We continue in the Gemara. Elo le Rav di Amar b'shiyesh ben arba machlekes. Rav says that only if you have four full tefach wide beams do you have a machlokes tanoim, where only then Rabbi Meir says they are unfit. Avol ein bohen arba divrei kol k'sheira, but beams less than four tefachim according to Rav. Everyone, even Rabbi Meir, says it's kosher schach. Heichi domi. How are we to understand the source we read at the top, where Rabbi Meir says that beams join together like sheets join together to create schach posel? What are the circa? How do we explain the beams? Heichi domi. Idis behu arbo. If the beams are four tefachim wide, lama lahu litzrufi. Why do you have to come on to joining together by a singular four tefach wide beam, according to Rabbi Meir, would pasel the sukkah? You don't have to speak about them joining together like sheets. E deles behu arbo amai, and if they are less than four tefach beams, according to Rav's version of Rabbi Meir, why is there any problem to begin with? V'hokonim bi'almoninhu, they are viewed as mere reeds. Totally good schach. Why even consider them joining together in the first place? So this is the end of our question, being according to Rav, who said what he said, namely that the machlokas exists only when you have four full tefach wide boards. Only then does a Rebbe Meir pasel. So then how do we explain the source? The oylom di isbu arba. The beams are four tefach wide beams. Why mitzdarfin? What does mitzdarfin mean? Mitzdarfin la arba amois min hatzad. This is a reference to the topic of doifen akuma. If you recall, we've had this in the past. Doifen akuma states, the rule states, literally, Dofen Akuma means a bent wall. But what do we mean by a bending wall? The Halacha L'Moshimini Sinai tells us, the oral tradition from Sinai tells us that if you have schach that's unfit, but it's within four tefachim of the wall of the sukkah, so it's considered as if the wall is bent till that point. It doesn't. Even though schach posel will pasel the sukkah if you have four tefachim of it going across the sukkah. However, if the schach posel is within four amos of a wall, so then it's it's okay. It comes under the rule of Dofen Akuma. Let us say you had from the wall of the sukkah beams, each one four tvachim, for a continuum of four amos. In other words, from the wall moving toward the center of the sukkah, four amos of these kind of beams, they will join up to create a problem of doifen akuma, beyond the realm of doifen akuma. And therefore, if you were to have schach kosher beyond that point, it's not going to help your sukkah cause, because your schach kosher is now too far away from the wall. You can take a look at illustration 201 on page 41, where this is illustrated. Here you have a wall, and you've got four tefach wide boards lasting for a distance of four amos, as is illustrated. The Rashi explains. Let's read the Rashi together. It's a few lines up from here. L'dalet amos minatzad, d'minatzad. When you are working off a wall, ein schach posel posel ele b'dalet amos. Schach posel does not present a disqualifying power to the sukkah unless you have four amos of the schach posel coming from the edge of the wall, moving toward the middle of the sukkah. Avol, the bebotze mehochi, less than four amos, gemiri, we have an oral tradition, it's called doifen akuma, the bent wall, where we view the wall as if it continues to include the schach posel that is within four amos of it. The koma Rabbi Yehuda, shnei misorim shel arbo'o, two boards, each one of four tfochim, the chain sidevach adal amos, same with starfin. If you were to set up your entire sukkah with boards of four tfochim, they wouldn't join up. Sha'af kula roi l'schach behen, l'sakech behen. You can cover your entire sukkah with four tefach wide boards, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the less leg gzeras tikra. Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold from the gzeras tikra. Whereas, according to Rebbe Meir, four tefach wide boards would present a problem if they join up one, they have a succession of these four tefach wide boards from the wall of the sukkah toward the, in the direction of the kosher schach, it will then present a problem where the kosher schach is four amos away from the wall, from which these boards began. And according to the rules of Doifen Akuma, you can have within four amos the schach posel, but if you have a continuum of four amos of schach posel, then you have the problem that the remaining schach kosher there has the benefit only of two walls. There isn't a third wall anymore for it, and hence your sukkah will be posel. Continuing in the Gemara, Lishno Achrino, another version of the question that we pose on Rav. Bishlamo Lishmuel, the Rav Shein Bohen Arboa Machloikis, Avol Yesh Bohen Arboa Divrako Psula, according to Shmuel, who said that when the boards are less than four tfochim, you have a machlokis, but if they are four tfochim, everyone, even Rav Yehuda, agrees that they are posel. My mitzdarfin, what does Rabbi Meir mean when he says boards are like sheets and they're mitzarif, they join together, mitzarfin la'arba amos min hatzad? So if you have a continuum of these boards that are between three and four tvachim coming from the side, so they'll mitzarif to create a problem where you don't benefit from Dofen Akuma anymore. Ela l'Rav, But according to Rav, Bishlamol Rebbe Meir my mitzdarfin mitzdarfin labaos minatzad. As far as Rav's point of view, who said that the machlokis is only if you have four tefach wide boards, but less than that, everyone agrees it's kosher. So we can explain Rabbi Meir, who said that the boards can join up to form a continuum of four amos of unfit boards. Elo, unfit boards meaning unkosher schach. Elo la Rabbi Yehuda, Yomar afilu yesh ben arbok sheira. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, who says four tefach wide boards are kosher. This is, of course, according to Rav's version. So, my ain mitzdarfin, why does the Tanaic source have to tell me that the boards are not mitzdarif? It's obvious that they're not mitzdarif. It's kosher schach. They're no worse than simple reeds. So why does the source have to tell me on the top line, ain mitzdarfin? The Gemara says, you're right. Since Rabbi Meir used the term mitzdarfin, that they do join up. Now, Rabbi Meir didn't. He said nesarim kisdinim, but the idea is that they're mitzdarfin. So, Amar Rabbi Yehuda ain mitzdarfin. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda was motivated to say they are not mitzdarif, even though in and of itself it's obvious. But simply in contrast to Rabbi Meir, so Rabbi Yehuda says, "Ein mitzdarfin." Tanya kavose de Rav, Tanya kavose de Shmuel. At this point, the Gemara shows us that there are Tanaic sources that back up each one of the Amoraic opinions, Rav and Shmuel, in their respective presentation of the Machlokes Tanoim between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. As we go along in the Gemara, we'll try to place an emphasis on the markings to show you how the source supports each one of these opinions. When we say these opinions, Rav and Shmuel. Tanyo Kavosei de Rav. We have a Tanaic source that will feature a Machlokas Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. You can see that we've underlined their names. Sochecha b'nesorim shel Erez she'ein. Let's read that again. Sochecha, you covered Yisrael b'nesorim shel Erez. Erez is a type of wood. He's wood, Erez beams. She'ein bohen arbo'o. The beams are less than four tefachim wide. Divrei hakol she. Everyone agrees that's kosher. By the way, that is what Rav said. So this is the support to Rav. Yesh ben arbo. If, however, the beams have four tefachim of width to them, Rabbi Meir posel, Rabbi Yehuda machshir. Well, that's also like Rav. Rabbi Meir would say that's unfit, and Rabbi Yehuda, it says it's okay. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Maisa b'shas hasakona, shevienu nisarim shahoyu bohen arba, and a story, an incident took place under the time of danger. This is a time when the Gentiles had made rules and edicts against the performance of mitzvahs, including sukkah, and nevertheless, an incident took place. Shehavienu nesorim shehoyu bohen arba. We brought boards that were four tefachim wide. Vesichachnu al gabi mirpeses, and we put them over our balcony. Vyoshavnu tachten, we sat under these four tefach wide boards, and everything was fine. That's the Maisa. Rabbi Yehuda is trying to back up his position with this incident, that four tefach wide boards are okay. Omrulo, so the ones who heard Rabbi Yehuda's testimony, they responded to him and said, Misham Raya, from there, you're trying to bolster your point of view. Ein shas hasakona raya. The time of duress, of danger, is not proof. When the Jews are subjected to all kinds of extenuating circumstances, so as we said before, we were dealing with rabbinic law, so there's room for leniency, there's room for for bending, so to speak, for accepting something that under better conditions we would not accept. So you can't bring proof from an incident of Shas Sakona, from dangerous times, to standard halacha. Tanyo Kavosi Dishmo. Now we have a Tanaic source supporting Shmuel's approach to the Machlokes Tanoyim. Sochecha b'nesarim shaleres sheyesh bohen arba. They covered a sukkah, or one who covers a sukkah with erez boards, four tfachim. Why? Divrei hakol psula. Of course, you can appreciate why we've dot underlined this. This is the main point. This source supports Shmuel that when you reach four tefach of width in the boards, everyone agrees. Even Rabbi Yehuda agrees it's unfit. Ein bohen arba, Rabbi Meir posav, Rabbi Yehuda machshir. If it doesn't have four tefachim, then Rabbi Meir passes. Rabbi Yehuda says it's okay. Umoide Rabbi Meir sheim yesh bein neser leneser kimlo neser. Rabbi Meir will concede that if you have, we'll call these unfit boards, let's say three tefach wide boards, but between each board, that's yesh bein neser. Neser is the singular of nesarim. If you have between each unfit board kimlo neser, the same width as the board itself, and as you have a gap of space between the board, so you have board gap, and the gap is the same width as the board. Shemnich psal beinem uksherup. Psal is a word meaning schach. Without getting into the etymology, Rashi does explain, but psal means schach. That Rabbi Meir will concede that you can place, if you place kosher schach between them, then your sukkah is acceptable. Umoide Rabbi Yehuda sheim nosan olel neser shu rochav arba tefachim. Rabbi Yehuda, who is the more lenient opinion, he will concede that if you placed a beam of four tefachim of width over your sukkah, ksheira, the sukkah is kosher, v'ein yishenim tachtov, but you are not to sleep under it. So, Rebbe Yehuda, who is the, as we say, the more lenient opinion, will agree that that if you place a beam of four tefachim, the sukkah is kosher. However, v'ein yishenim tachtov, you don't sleep under it. One who sleeps under it has not fulfilled his requirement. Let's take a look at Rashi, just a few lines up from here. In the Rashi column, Rashi says, even though he is lenient with boards that are less than four tefachim, he will concede that if you have a singular board that has a width of four tefachim, that if you placed it on the sukkah but near the wall, even though Dofen Akuma states that the sukkah remains kosher, lo yishan tachtov, don't sleep under it. So that even though the four tefach wide board doesn't ruin because it's within four amos of the wall, and hence we apply the Dofen Akuma concept that the wall bends till that point, and then any schach kosher that exists from that point till the opposite wall will be the beneficiary of having three walls around it. Nevertheless, don't sleep under it. We continue in the Gemara with a new discussion, but all under the general heading of the Nisarim, the issue of Nisarim. This is Hofchon al Hatzad. Itmar. Hofchon al Tzidehem. You took a board of four tvachim width and stood them upright, meaning, or stood them, as you can see in the illustration, 205 on page 41 of the Pirush Chai, the bottom picture. so that he stood the boards up on their edges. Rav Huna Omar Psula. For Rav Chisda, for Rabo, Ba Rav Huna Amri Kshera. Now, of course, to appreciate this, it would be best understood that we're not working within the opinion of Rebbe Yehuda as was presented by Rav, because as far as that opinion is concerned, these boards are okay. But according to let us say Rav's version of Rebbe Meir, or Shmuel's version of Rav and Shmuel's version of Rebbe Yehuda and Rebbe Meir, four tefach boards are basically problematic. However, what happens if you stand them up on their edges, like we see in illustration 205? So Rav Huna Omar Psula, Rav Chisda Verabo, Ba Rav Huna Amri Kshera. We have a Machlokis Amoroyim here. And a little story that follows. Iklo Rav Nachman Lesura. Rav Nachman, whose name we didn't see in the last two lines, he is a visitor. He comes to Sura. Ul Legabe Rav Chisda Verabo Ba Rav Huna. Rav Chisda and Rabo visit Rav Nachman, and we should point out that Rav Chisda and Rabo, they were lenient with the four tefach boards stood up on their edge. So they, we'll call them the lenient ones, they visit with Rav Nachman, Amri Lei, they ask him, Hafchan al Tzidei Mahu, what is the din regarding these boards, four tefach boards that you stand up on their edge? Amar Lehu Psula. Rav Nachman rules like Rav Huna that it's unfit. And the explanation, Nasu Kishpudin Shomateches. They're unfit because once you have a board for Tefach in width, it's called unfit Tzach. And unfit Tzach is just as bad as Raz made of metal. Shpudin Shomateches. And however you position Shpudin Shomateches, it's unfit for covering your sukkah with it. So too, it doesn't matter how you position four tefach wide boards, they are unfit. Omar Lahu Rav Huna. Rav Huna, you can imagine, probably has a grin on his face, and he says to Rav Chisda, Rabo, Rav Huna, he says to them, Lo Amri Lahu Amri Kavosi, didn't I tell you to hold like me? Amru Lei. So they, Rav Chisda and Rabbi Rav Huna, said back, Omi Omar Lon Mor Taimo Velo Kablinon Mine? Did you, sir, give us a reason for your opinion and we didn't accept it? You said they're apostles, but you didn't give any explanation. Rav Nachman, at least, he gave an explanation. Amar Lahu, so Rav Huna said back to them, Umi bo'isu minoi taimo velo amri lahu, did you request of me a reason that I didn't tell you? A very fascinating give and take over here, and there's a certain amount of, we'll say, educational value in trying to understand when you are speaking to someone or saying halachas to someone, are you expected to volunteer the reason, or is that something that the listener has to request of you? Seems to be a difference of thought in terms of teaching over ideas, something that is a topic worth looking into in and of itself. But for our purposes, we continue with this discussion. Lemo Misayale. Here we have a long question. Lemo is a suggestion. Shall we say that we can bring a support to Rav Huna that said that Hofchan al Tzidein, standing up the four tefach wide boards, is still unfit? The sukkah is still unkosher. Can we support him from the following? So, Lemo Sele. And you can see we have a dashed underline at the end of the source. That's really the main point of attempting to support Rav Huna. So the source says, "Eino machzekes kidei rosho v'rubo v'shulchano." If your sukkah is not capable of containing your head, torso, and your table, oy shenifritza bo pirtza kidei shiyizdake bo gediba bas roish, or a breach takes place in the sukkah so that a goat kid. Now you can see an illustration of this. 206. There's a breach in the at the bottom of the wall where it doesn't. It is a gap of 3 tfachim. The expression is kedeshi is dakir bo gedi. Gedi is a goat, a young goat. Kid can penetrate, enter easily. So that ruins the wall from being a kosher mechitza. Oi shenosan ol neser shurochav arba tfachim, and this is where we start getting interested. Or he placed upon the sukkah a board measuring 4 tfachim wide. Afal pishel ol hichnis lesoichel shloisha tfachim psula. Even though he didn't place over the sukkah any more than 3 tfachim of the 4 tfachim board. Well, hechi dummy, what does that mean? You have a 4 tefach board it's 4 tefach in width. What does it mean that you have only 3 tefachim of it over the sukkah? Lav kidgon shahofchon al tzideim. Is it not a case where he stood the 4 tefach wide board on its edge? So the where the edge is, it's instead of, we would call this a 3x4. In other words, its width is 4 tefachim and its thickness is 3 tefachim. So he stood the boards up in their thickness, and the source says it's not kosher, so that this would support Rav Huna Hafchon al Tzidehen, standing a board up on its edge. The sukkah is posel; it's still unfit. The Gemara says loy. This source is not a support to Rav Huna because the circumstances are something else altogether. Hacha b'mayaskinan. The case featured over here is kagon to ancha apuma de metalolosa. He took this board, and you can see illustration 207. He took the 4 tefach wide board, placed it flat on top of the sukkah. However, only 3 of the 4 tefachim are actually over the sukkah, with 1 additional tefach protruding beyond the sukkah. Now, reading that in the words, the oncha apuma, puma is the entrance, the metalosa is the sukkah, the ayol tlosa legav, 3 are inside the sukkah, the apik chad lebarn, 1 tefach remains outside the sukkah. The hava le psal hayotze min hasukkah. This is an example of psal. Psal again means schach, that protrudes beyond the sukkah. The chal psal hayotze min hasukkah nidon kesukkah. Schach that protrudes beyond the sukkah is nevertheless considered like part of the sukkah. Now, what does that mean for us? So let's take a look at the Rashi. Apuma de metalolosa, etzel ruach revi. Ruach is the fourth side. Revi is the fourth side of the sukkah, the entranceway in this case. She'en shom doifen the lifke mine ayde doifen akuma. You don't have the benefit of a wall to, legitimatize or absorb within the context of the wall a 4 tefach wide beam. The hall ein kan doifen el pesach. All you have here is an entranceway. The afagav de lo aili kule lesoy chalav defanes et stodim. And even though you don't have all of it within the boundaries of the walls, you have only 3 of the 4 tefachim within the sukkah. Puzzle. It's still unfit. Tahu tefach davroi mechshav nami ki sukkah. That one tefach that's outside is considered part of the sukkah. The ilu schach kosher have. If, let's say, you had schach kosher branches at the entranceway and part of the branches were protruding beyond the entranceway, Hava mutar lishon sham, the yotze yedei sukkah. You would be able to sleep there. In other words, outside the entrance of the sukkah, but you are covered by, if you were be covered by kosher schach. The amrinan likamam psalis in the sukkah, ki hai gavna, nidon kasukka. That when you have branches, kosher schach extended beyond the sukkah, it's considered like the sukkah. So here, in this case, what you see in 207, you have to say that the entire, even though all you have over the sukkah itself are three tfachim, you certainly would not be able to sit under that because the fourth tefach is also considered part of the sukkah. Naturally, if the, and he doesn't illustrate it here, but if the entire sukkah was a minimum size sukkah, and you had, let us say you had four tefachim of kosher schach, and this kind of arrangement, so in effect you'd have four tefachim of kosher schach and four tefachim of unkosher schach, so you wouldn't have a kosher sukkah. There's much more to say on that particular topic, that last example, but Rashi himself, you can see, doesn't get too involved. All he tells you is that because of the concept of psal hayotzei min hasukkah is considered a sukkah, that's a kind of double-edged sword. That if it's schach kosher that extends beyond the sukkah, you're able to spend your sukkahs under the part protruding forward from the sukkah. And the flip side is that if it's this, you can't spend time under the three tefachim that are within the sukkah, because the fourth tefach that's beyond the sukkah is considered as if it's part of the sukkah as well. And four tefach of board is not acceptable. But for our purposes, this source doesn't deal with hafchon al tzidehen. So we can't say that the psul in this source is a support to Rav Huna. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.